This episode is brought to you by you through your support of our Patreon at patreon.com/sayswho. That's our Patreon. That's a website, if you're unfamiliar. And it's a website where every Sunday you get this all over again. You get me and Maureen doing a little something we call the Town Watch, which is essentially a lot like this, only a half an hour and somehow miraculously looser than what we do here for an hour. So you can get that if you give it the $5 or $10 a month level. That $10 a month level also gets you a sticker in the mail every month because you become a member of the Says Who Sticker Club. And every sticker is great. I just finished the one that will be going to people who supported on the April 1st pay cycle. It's real good. I'm real happy with it.
I looked at it. I love it so much. I think you guys are going to like it.
The thing is, each one's a real good one. So you just got to get in.
Dan, will you just come and run all my shit for me?
Yes.
And also my life?
I would happily.
Are we going to buy that house I just sent you and we're going to live there and make a little empire together?
Wait, what the fuck house did you just send me?
Yesterday, I sent you a house that we should definitely buy.
I don't think you sent it to me.
All right. Well, then I'm moving in with someone.
Well, anyway, patreon.com/sayswho.
It's such a good house.
Well, okay, now.
Hold on. I got to see how much.
Oh, now you got to send it to me.
Let's see if I sent. Who did I send this house to? I don't know who I sent this house to. It was a good house, though.
All right. Well, you'll find out on moving day, I guess.
I'm looking forward to my new roommates. Whoever got that text.
Yeah.
If you got that text, let's go. A couple things about yours truly.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, Death at Morning House, available for pre-order. If you're in the United States, wherever you get your pre-order from, you're going to be eligible for the pre-order gift. They'll be putting up the site and about how to get the gift. Sorry, I got an email that said Death at Morning House that came in and went ding, and I went, but you'll be able to get the gift. Pre-ordering it is like so great. And it's going to come, I think, at a really good time this summer when things are going to be getting juicy and sloshy. And you might want to go on a murder vacation on an island in upstate New York. And I think it'll be pretty cool and refreshing for you. So for yourself, for your friends, for 20 of your friends, I'll be going on a fairly substantial tour. So I'm hoping to see a bunch of you in person, have a little first night release night party in an undisclosed city that rhymes with Schmate Plewis and, some UK dates. If you could follow me on Instagram at Maureen Johnson Books, because I'll get into it. I'm having existential dread, but, thank you.
Well, if you are, I mean, you can be anywhere, but if you are in the United States and you want to pre-order one of Maureen's books and you want to do it from maybe our little bookshop that we call Kick Bezos in theballs.org, you can do that because we have it available right there. Also, a whole bunch of other books. So just go ahead and get some books.
There's some great books like Leigh Bardugo's new The Familiar, which is amazing. You can pre-order Sarah Rhys Brennan's Long Live Evil or Holly Black's. Actually, Holly's came out. We get Holly's, anything of Holly's as well. Sword Catcher by Cassandra Clare.
Slow down.
So many recommendations.
I'm gonna add some of these in. So give me some of these titles again.
The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo.
All right, hold on. We're doing this live. There it is. Boom.
Okay.
Hold on. I haven't done it yet. Boom, boom, boom. Add to my book lists. Boom. Books mentioned on the pod. Done.
Okay.
All right, next one.
The Book of Love by Kelly Link.
You know what? I gave that book to Janice Dillard, and Janice Dillard likes that book a lot.
I was blessed enough to read that book in draft over the last few years. I've seen that book develop, so I'm feeling pretty lucky about that. Long Live Evil by Sarah Rhys Brennan.
Look at this. We're just putting a whole bunch of stuff in.
Holly Black's newest. Also, the new Spiderwick show is coming out very soon.
Wait, that's The Cruel Prince. Is that it?
Yeah. Well, that's The Cruel Prince series.
Okay. Well, I don't know what her latest is. It doesn't give me that information. You know,
start with Cruel Prince. That way everybody has a good baseline to start with.
Sounds good.
Swordcatcher by Cassandra Clare.
This has got to be a fascinating moment for everyone. Swordcatcher?
I'm just giving you some book recommendations.
I know. I love it.
And sort of separately, I'm a big Eric Larson lover, and there's a new Eric Larson coming in 7 days.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. Oh, is there? Yes, 7 days.
That's exciting because it is almost the teen's birthday, and the teen likes Eric Larson.
Truly great nonfiction writer. And if you haven't read any of his, my favorite is actually Thunderstruck.
Oh, yeah. I love Thunderstruck.
Which is, it's often a dual narrative. And that, Deep Wake is incredible, which is about.
Is this the new one? Is the Demon of Unrest? Yes, that's the demon,
which is about the Civil War. It has something to do with the Civil War. So I don't know what topics he's weaving together or if he's doing a single topic, but.
I got to send this link to Janice because we're struggling on birthday gifts.
Also, I've bought it, but I haven't cracked into 1,000 Words by Jamie Attenborough. And I'm pretty excited to do that.
All right, man, look at this. I have been reading slowly because I want to enjoy every moment of it. But Hanifa Durakib's new book, There's Always This Year.
Oh.
Oh, it's so good. I think, honestly, I mean, for me, Dan Sinker, he is the greatest living writer that exists right now.
I got to read that.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, then let's go. Let's roll.
He's like a memoirist and a poet. And this is about basketball and grief and growing up. And
I often don't do sports books, but then I'll be like, then I can be drawn in.
This is a sports book in a very not like his previous book, which is honestly the best thing I've ever read in my life. A Little Devil in America is sort of ostensibly about black performance, musical performance, but it's like
about so much more. Well, I think I might start there.
Oh, he's so good. He is a writer that I absolutely love. And also when I read him, I absolutely hate because there's no way that I can write like that, you know? But man, he's good. Anyway, I just added all those fucking books mentioned on the pod list.
This is our intro. Welcome. Like, that's great. That's a very positive. I feel good about this intro today.
I like it. We're just sending people the good things. Oh, boy.
Ha! So satisfying. Oh, you guys, I'm so pleased with myself right now.
We were doing good.
I'm so pleased.
Well, congratulations. Just says who,
the podcast is not a podcast.
It's a coping strategy. I am Dan Sinker.
Dan, I did that to you because we live in times where you have to be ready for anything.
It's true.
I've had a little bit of a bananas morning here.
You have.
There's a lot going on personally with some stuff. There was a sick family member in England. Oscar's over there. We've been finally getting some reports on what's going on. And I thought I might have to go to England. It doesn't look like I'm going. It was one of those things where I'm like, am I packing a bag and leaving in 4 hours kind of a thing? And I don't think I'm doing that. So it's all been a little popping off, a little stuff popping off with the person I'm helping with the domestic violence issue. You know, we're getting stuff resolved for her. And Dan, I mentioned before existential crisis.
Yeah.
It's that there's a kind of hum in my head, like a white noise.
Yeah.
And part of it is because everything is shifting so quickly that, for example, a lot of the places I use to communicate, like horrible Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
Is moving over to a format that my brain doesn't easily, like, doesn't know what to do with yet.
Yeah.
Because it's very visual.
To Instagram or TikTok.
Yeah, it's never been my favorite way of doing things.
Right.
And part of my brain, it like wants to munch on this and go, hey, like, do I want to like, do I want to get more into this? Because a part of my brain's like, it doesn't feel like you, but then part of me's like, but it maybe does. And then I'm like, right. Do I have to take like a really complicated photography course? And do I need to do like, then I start weaseling down all these pathways of like, do I need to learn all this stuff? Or
right.
Like, is there all these things I really want to get involved in? And then I'm like, how do I write? I'm supposed to be writing, I'm trying to write. There's a kind of like clanging noise and then a kind of just like a quiet confusion at points. Do you relate to any of this?
I do. This is the thing I think I will answer the question of, do I have to take a fancy photography course? The answer is no.
Okay.
Because I think one of the things that is interesting to me, and I have not engaged in it, but at least with TikTok, there is a level of anti-gloss to it.
I like that. I enjoy that part of it.
You know, the sort of bad, like the way a lot of people do, like I'm superimposing myself on top of another thing and it looks like shit. You know,
yeah.
Like, I appreciate how much of TikTok looks like shit.
I'm into that stuff.
That to me, that is a, you know, to get art school on it, right? Like it's a visual language that enables participation. Right.
I do like that.
Where I think Instagram gives you that feeling because Instagram has so many years behind it of high gloss perfection. Right. Mm-hmm. Even when they have moved toward a more TikTok-y approach with reels and shit like that, there is the baggage of what Instagram means
right.
ahead of it. Right. Whereas TikTok can be a lot rougher.
Maybe that's where I need to be then, because I like a scrappier feel.
Yeah, I also think though that you could do that on Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, you know? The thing is,
I mean, so much of fucking Instagram stories are people reposting TikTok videos that it's like essentially the same thing now.
And a lot of say the stuff I like on Instagram are artists that like maybe just post rough stuff, like
yeah,
here's all my fucking pens,
right.
Or like, this is what I look like after a long rehearsal. Like they're just sweaty and on the floor.
I mean, I think that for someone like you, this is like a behind the scenes social media consulting moment here. For someone like you who already has an established audience,
mm-hmm.
right? And who has many, many, many years of an established voice within that audience, whether it's with something with Says Who, whether it's the way you have presented yourself on Twitter for a dozen years or however mm-hmm. fucking long it's been now, like that translates really easily, I think, to a rougher around the edges Instagram.
I don't think you
need to polish it up, you know? I think that to me, it's like for established artists, this shift is hard. Because mm-hmm. it's moving into areas that you hadn't had to concentrate on before, right? But because you already have an established fan base, you know, because there are people that are going to follow you wherever, you know, and they know what they're going to get. That's easier. Like to me, it's like the starting out now. Jesus Christ!
I don't even get it. It's more like that. Twitter, I like to have fun.
Yeah.
It was fun and I like communicating. And I'm like, where's the fun? Where's the back and forth? That's the fun part. And I feel like Instagram and all those don't have as much back and forth.
They do not have as much back and forth. Or it's a different type of back and forth.
It's a different type of back and forth.
It is a less conversational, far more kind of publishing based back and forth,
right.
Essentially. This is me wearing my like, I'm doing a job hat.
Yeah. Here.
This is the kind of shit I do.
I just feel brain tired. And I feel like a lot of people feel brain tired right now. Because it's like, there's so many things being hammered at us. That like, Publishers Weekly just tweeted something today, an article from the New Republic that's like, AI and the death of the human writer. And I said, not today, Satan. Like, why are you doing this, Publishers Weekly?
Yeah.
Like you didn't
Here's
think
my spicy
you didn't
take
think,
on all that shit.
You didn't think people were stressed out enough and you really just wanted to get involved? Like what was the deal with that?
My spicy take on all that shit is that it's not going to happen. You know, that
probably not.
if anything, we're going to be reminded why we like people more than before.
I think that's going to be true in some respects.
I think that we are in a funny transitionary point, and it feels very existential, but my general feeling is, you know, while I am not a huge, like, I mean, I use these fucking tools for a storytelling project that I'm doing right now, right? Like, I don't feel like they're the devil, but I also understand they have massive limitations.
Right.
And those massive limitations are, left to their own devices, they just produce shit, right? And I think that mostly we have lived in a world where things are producing shit, you know, and this just sort of speeds that up a bit. But I also think that more and more we are uninterested in shit.
We are entering several points of inflection.
Yeah. Yeah.
In so many ways, Dan.
See, it's French, true.
Trans, little trans. Points of in like movement and.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Dan. I forgot that we were even doing a show. I thought we were just.
Talking
about social media and careers. Well,
today, what I do like is that today we've had a lot of positive talk so far about books.
Yeah.
About making things, about how to communicate with people.
Yeah.
And let's talk about these major points of change and effect and communication.
Okay.
It's just right here. Just
are you setting things up?
Moving it right into...
I don't know.
You don't want to?
I don't know. Dan, it's so early. It's 16 minutes in. If we start at 16 minutes in, that means we got to do 44 minutes of it.
And you don't...
If we push it out, then we only got to do like 30.
Dan.
Huh?
The other day, before Oscar flew out, I said, I am going to get cookies, the good cookies for said relative.
Right.
Because very rarely do you just shove someone on a plane, and then you can deliver New York cookies to someone in a forest in England.
Yeah.
I went to the good cookie place and it was closed for filming. They were filming a television show in there.
That's how it works at cookie places.
They were using it as, that's the thing about New York is that sometimes they're like, this is now Law and Order today or something. So I was like, can you sell me the cookies? And they were like, no, we can't sell you the cookies. And I was like, ah. So then I'm walking the dog the whole time. And I'm thinking, I'm going to pass a good bakery at some point. And then finally, it's like, I'm going to have to walk all the way to Little Italy to get the good cookies.
Yeah.
So I walked, which is pretty far from where I'm at, all the way down to Mulberry Street in Little Italy.
Yeah.
Got the cookies, put the cookies in my bag.
Yeah.
With the dog. So we did a 5-mile walk that day.
Yeah.
We do a really long walks, but that's a little bit longer than I normally take her.
Okay.
On one go. And I was very, very close. I was on the street with the courthouse.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I'm standing there on this corner going, do I turn left or right? Like, do I keep going or do I head towards home? And I saw like a ambulance and some flashing lights. And I was thinking, I'm like, I'm just going to turn towards home.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's worth it. Like I've already been out for 7 million hours.
Yeah.
Dog's tired. Yeah. So I think I was down there when unfortunately someone had been, self-immolated in front of the courthouse. I think that's probably around the time that I was passing and making my decision with the cookies.
That is a confluence of events.
We're not going to discuss that. That just happened. No. But like, I think that's around the time I was there. So we have the Trump trial happening. Dan, what part of New York City do you want to talk about? Because
you all are really popping off right now.
Truly, we are.
You have regained your position.
Yeah.
As the center of the world right now.
Yep. You want to come up and do some stuff with us? So let's get into it. What's happening here in New York City?
Well, at your alma mater.
Yes.
Columbia University.
Yes.
They are cracking down on an encampment of pro-Palestinian protesters. They began that crackdown immediately after their president was hauled in front of Congress. They arrested a whole bunch of folks. And weirdly, Maureen, that didn't stop it.
No, it's It's really strange. Like, even the NYU came out and said those arrests were pointless.
The NYPD.
Yeah. What did I just say?
You said the NYU.
Did I?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I saw NYU on there.
I know. Yeah, the NYPD was like, we don't really know why we made those arrests. And this is the NYPD.
It's their favorite thing.
That is their 100% favorite thing.
One time I almost got speed cuffed arrested by the NYPD because I turned onto St. Mark's Place.
That's how it works sometimes.
There was there was activity going on because of something. And I was going to see somebody's show at this little theater underneath a building. And like, it's called like the theater under some St. Mark's.
Yeah.
And I just turned and they were just speed cuffing everyone on the street. And I was like, not today. And then I just turned and walked another direction. It was just because they were sweeping people up in buses. This was a while ago.
There's nothing they love more than pointless arrests. That's like their whole thing.
They have like a building for it.
That's what the P in NYPD stands for. Pointless arrest.
They really like to do it. It's very popular.
They love it. And yet they were like, we are not totally sure why they did that. That granted, that was like last week. And now they've figured it out. And they're like, oh, we kind of like this.
Yeah.
Because now they've done it. They've done it other places. And weirdly, cracking down on student protesters has only made more students protest. Huh. I wonder if there's an academic discipline where you learn about things that happened in the past. Yeah.
I think once stuff is done, you don't have to think about it anymore.
If there was, you would think these college administrators would perhaps, talk to someone that has studied it, because the past is pretty good at showing you what happens when you crack down on protesters with fucking police.
Also, Dan, not for nothing, Columbia University, very famously in 1968, had a student Vietnam War protest where they literally occupied a building.
Right.
And I think sort of kidnapped a dean. But sure. It was like a weirdly peaceful, like they just kind of had him in a building and they kind of talked to him for a week or something. Like, yeah. It was like, there's a whole history of this.
This is the thing about student protests, Maureen. Everyone loves student protests when they happened 50 years ago.
Mm.
And they don't love them so much when they're happening now. It's weird how that works.
And there's a professor there that's behaving pretty badly and calling for he says the National Guard should come out. And everybody wanted to remind him, you know, as nicely as possible that when you call the National Guard out to student protests, say they did in Kent State, Ohio, in 1970, that resulted in the shooting death of four random students.
Yeah.
Because they just opened fire into the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on a book tour eons ago, and it was me and an author and activist named Mark Anderson, and we were in Ohio, and he was like, we're driving 2 hours out of our way to go to Kent State. And I was like, sounds good. That is an intense location to hang out at.
Yeah. It's quite famous.
Yeah. So Columbia is where these encampments started. Then they moved to Yale, where they are already starting to arrest people. NYU got in on the action, student encampment, and then they were going to clear that out, and then the teachers came and encircled the encampment to protect the students, which is pretty goddamn badass.
I mean, some of them were also wearing their robes, like their official, like academic robes.
Yeah. Like, that's some fucking shit right there. And, NYPD came and arrested, I think, 300 or something of them.
Mm-hmm.
Good job. It's now spreading all over the place. You would expect it to.
Mm-hmm.
So great job. The University of Southern California, which I have one of my many, many jobs is working over there. They, right after the Columbia president testified to Congress, they announced that they were canceling the speech of their valedictorian because she is a minor in genocide studies. That is a minor that they offer.
Just not for nothing. That's a fairly metal offer.
It's a super metal offering.
I mean, whoa.
And so they canceled it because they were worried that she might, I don't know, talk about genocide. Yeah. That sparked a lot of protests at campus. It also sparked a bunch of other speakers threatening to speak out. And so the administration over there had the galaxy brain idea on Friday. They were like, we've got this solved, y'all. Don't worry. We're just going to cancel all speakers.
Dan, ask me if I could have predicted that Columbia University's administration could fuck up something so badly that it would send up a cascade nationwide that was the opposite of everything they were in their fucked upness trying to do. Ask me that question.
Did Columbia do okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Columbia's administration has baffled me since I was a student.
Yeah.
That is truly a place where I'm like, I don't get it. Like, I'm like, I got here and I expected more and didn't get it.
The thing about college administration is it just seems universally fucking terrible. And I don't understand it. I guess it's because ultimately most, at least major universities, are sort of hedge funds that dabble in education. Right?
A little bit.
And so really what they're about is churning investments into larger investments. But yeah, so USC canceled their valedictorian speech. Then they canceled all speeches. I mean, just the, like, I don't even understand that. My favorite thing is that the founder of the genocide studies minor wrote an op-ed in the Daily Trojan, who was basically like, here's the deal. I've written 10 books about the Holocaust. I know a lot about, like, I fucking founded a genocide studies thing. I know this student. What the fuck are you doing? Yeah. It is remarkable to see so many people lining up on the wrong side of history. Maureen, here's the deal. The real reason for all of this is because Republicans in the House, remember, they hold a 2-seat majority in the House right now, but that 2-seat majority allows them to control committees and things like that. They have been big game hunting for the last 6 months to bring college presidents down, right? They've had a pretty good track record so far of bringing folks in and then having them have to resign afterwards or that sort of thing. And they're doing it all on the auspices of anti-Semitism on campus, right? And so it is by no coincidence that this crackdown at Columbia happened the day after the president was brought in to testify. It is absolutely no coincidence to me that USC canceled that valedictorian on that same day, right? Like, because they don't want to have to go. All these people are fucking chicken shits, right? Because here is the thing. The Republicans in Congress don't give a fuck about anti-Semitism, right? This is just cover for their ongoing war against higher ed and diversity. And it is so fucking transparent. It is so obvious. And yet these goddamn college administrators keep falling into the same fucking trap, because ultimately what they care about is their own power and not about the thing that they're supposed to do, which is, I don't know, protect students.
Right.
Champion academic freedom. Makes me mad, Maureen.
Yeah. Yeah. What's also been kind of bizarre is seeing how easily there have been some media traps of people saying that these protests or the encampments are violent.
Yeah.
And then you get all these videos from, like, that's the one of the great things is, like, there are literally like 10,000 cameras at these, and they're like, here we are having a pizza.
Yeah.
Here are the Jewish students, you know, peacefully sitting in the middle. They are there in the middle of the encampment, you know, like
having a Seder.
And how easily a bunch of media outlets were like, all this violence. And then But then you go in and there's nothing happening.
Yeah.
But they're making stuff happen. Right. They are actually fomenting problems outside the gates.
Or, you know, they're a video of one dude will, you know, will go around. I mean, this is age old practice on how to discredit protests, right?
Yes.
Which is just find one person and be like, see, now you can't defend it because we found one person that said shitty things. And it's like, well, wait, what? No, you're just picking one person. There's like hundreds and hundreds of people here.
And what has resulted from all this is hundreds more students and faculty coming out.
Yes.
The tents going up.
As everyone that had half a brain and would have told them to begin with.
And these students are risking expulsion. They are risking, they've been, you know, some of them have been suspended.
Yeah.
And in some cases, at least one department at Columbia is continuing to teach suspended students and giving them grades. And
good job.
So
it's also, to me, it's the end of the semester, you know, like it is for a lot of these kids. So like the USC graduation thing, right? These are the kids who their last graduation from high school was May 2020. So they had their last graduation completely fucked over by COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And now here they are, 4 years later, hundreds of thousands of dollars spent later, and they're having their graduation fucked over again.
Right.
Like, all of these kids have been through so goddamn much. All of them. Every single student in college right now had COVID high school. And these administrators are not looking out for them at fucking all.
No. I truly do have a lot, and I'm not going to say about how kind of little I think of Columbia administration.
Yeah.
As a higher thing. Like, it truly, from the minute I got there, I was like, oh, this place is really like, it's an amazing school and also a money pit. Like,
yeah.
It's definitely grinding things at a level that I had never seen before.
Yeah.
But you have a bunch of students in tents. Everybody's turning out, peacefully sitting. Like, they're sitting between a building called Low Library and Butler Library. Low Library used to be a library, and now it's an administration building that's on sort of one side of this long green.
Yeah.
And the other side is Big Butler Library, which is the main. There's many libraries, but that's the main one. And man, they love that lawn. They love that lawn. Let me just tell you, you've never had a romance like they do with that lawn. They love it. They love it so much. I think I never saw anything on that lawn except like one time some guys were like throwing a football or something. Like, nothing. It was like, don't touch it. Don't even look at it. So yeah, they're on the lawn. And I think partially they were like, they're on the lawn. They're on the grass. They're sitting there. They're eating snacks. Like, people sat on it, but...
Yeah.
I think you were just supposed to kind of look at it and not really, you know, they were afraid the grass would get bent or something.
Yeah, you know,
got
to watch out for that grass.
But it's all happening at around 116th Street.
Yeah.
So Columbia has more of a perimeter in that sense. NYU is more diffuse. It's a collection of buildings in various neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So I live in part of NYU territory because NYU is sort of like a scramble of areas.
Yeah, yeah.
Columbia has a scramble of areas, but it has much more of a central location. So things that would happen here at down here in NYU territory are going to be more street level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to get far weirder faster in a couple of different ways.
Yeah.
And I think they're plyboarding up something, and like there's as we speak, there's weird stuff going on.
Yeah.
Meanwhile.
Fun stuff. Meanwhile, Maureen.
Go 5 minutes more down the street. So Columbia's up at 116th. NYU sort of starts around 14th Street.
Yeah.
And continues down into like around 8th or something like that. Like, it's all kind of in that area down there. And then you kind of keep going south and we hit the courts.
The courts, which is where the first criminal trial of Donald Trump is actually underway. miraculously jury selection wrapped last week. I thought they were going to do that shit forever, Maureen.
Truly, I don't understand.
They somehow managed to find 12 jurors and 6 alternates in about 3 days. They had hundreds of people come through, but they ended up with a jury of 5 women, 7 men. That's in your 12. I don't know what the makeup of the other 6 is. Who gives a fuck? They're from Manhattan. They seem to somehow not have opinions, so that's cool. And they are in for 6 long weeks that officially got underway on Monday with opening statements. They went, Maureen, pretty much as you would expect. Prosecutors say that Trump masterminded a criminal conspiracy to cover up payments to Stormy Daniels in order to keep it out of the news in the weeks heading into the 2016 presidential election. Said prosecutor Matthew Colangelo, quote, "The defendant, Donald Trump, orchestrated a criminal scheme to corrupt the 2016 presidential election. Then he covered up that criminal conspiracy by lying to his New York business in his New York business records over and over and over again." Defense argued that Trump didn't do anything wrong. Defense attorney Todd Blanche said, quote, "I have a spoiler alert. There's nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. It's called democracy." I don't think that's the definition of democracy, but, you know.
Dad, I need a nap. I just need a nap.
More so, they argued that, sure, if business records were falsified, Trump didn't have anything to do with it. He, quote, "had nothing to do with the invoice, with the check being generated, or with the entry in the ledger."
Okay.
They also took a little time in their opening statement to discredit Trump's former fixer for his wandering dick, Michael Cohen, saying that Cohen is, quote, "obsessed with Trump," and that, quote, "his entire financial livelihood depends on President Trump's destruction."
I think accidentally accurate.
Yeah, I was going to say, also relatable.
Broken clock.
Yeah. So once opening statements were done yesterday, the trial moved immediately to their first witness, former head of American Media Inc., that's the National Enquirer, David Pecker. A name that couldn't be better, honestly.
It's just really good.
But his testimony yesterday was only very short, because a juror had to go to an emergency dental appointment.
This is what I'm talking about, Dan. This is what I've been looking forward to. This is exactly what I've been looking forward to, is that every time somebody in that jury is like, "I got a toothache, I got to go," Donald Trump has to wait.
Yeah.
And I fucking love it. Feed it to me, right into my veins.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as we talked about last week, this man has to show up for everything.
And he doesn't. Oh, it's so good, Dan.
It's a criminal trial.
We are only on day 2, really, of him having to sit. Well, let's see. We're on day of him having to do this part is day 2. Are they taking off Wednesdays? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, they don't work on Wednesdays, at least unless they have to. But yeah, so Wednesdays will be off tomorrow. So tomorrow will be off.
Nice.
But Pecker, I could just say that forever.
I mean, it's not bad.
Yeah. It reminds me of one of my favorite British terminologies is bell end.
It's pretty good.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I like bell end. Anyway, David Pecker only testified for a short time yesterday. In that time, he literally testified for like 20 minutes. Why did they even do it? Like, why weren't they just like, "It's cool. You know, juror 7 or whatever has a toothache. We're going to, like, opening statements are done. We'll wrap up and come back tomorrow." I don't know why they didn't. He only talked about what he called checkbook journalism in broad terms, the way the National Enquirer would pay for stories, which, note for those of you that don't know, that's not how normal journalism works. You don't pay for interviews. You don't pay for anything. You don't do that. National Enquirer does. We learned yesterday that editors there could spend up to $10,000 on a story on their own discretion. But anything above that, had to run through David Pecker. That was about as far as yesterday went. They went to allow that jury to go get their tooth drilled, came back today. But this morning, Maureen, court had some business they had to attend to, which was to have prosecutors and defense argue whether Trump has already violated his gag order 10 times, largely through posts on Truth Social.
And has he?
Well, the defense argument is literally, Maureen, retweets do not equal endorsements, which it turns out isn't a good legal approach to take. It didn't go well for them.
According
to New York Times' live blog of the events, Justice Mershon pushed Todd Blanche to do a forensic accounting on how reposts happen in Trump's world because, quote, it's not passive. Essentially, their argument was like, he's just reposting some stuff.
Right.
He doesn't even know
what it is.
Yeah, he doesn't even know what he's doing. Yeah. And also a level of like, well, it's other people that are doing it, right? So this is interesting because there's also a little microcosm of what their main argument is going to be for the thing, which is like,
Stormy Daniels was
paid off. And yeah, Michael Cohen was paid off. And yeah, but he didn't do any of that, right? He wasn't the guy that did it. And that's basically what they're saying with this stuff. But throughout the morning, Justice Mershon pushed Todd Blanche to clarify his arguments, quote, only to have Blanche deny that he is saying what he seems to be saying. In the New York Times live blog, they say Trump is very lucky that the jurors are not here for this. Mershon is really dressing down Blanche right now. Quote, you've presented nothing, Mershon said to Blanche, who had been presenting his arguments for 20 minutes at that point. The New York Times reporters added, quote, it's devastating for Blanche.
It's just fun to, it's just, you know what? We have just a little treat for us. You know what I mean? Just a little something for us.
A little fun time, good time.
There's nothing wrong with giving us a little something.
Yeah. So we don't yet know. The judge hasn't decided whether these are violations of the gag order, though it sure seems like he didn't really buy anything that the defense was selling on it. So we'll see. Likely he will get another stern warning. There will probably be some sort of minor fine. I think it's $1,000 a thing. There is the possibility of jail time, but I would believe that when I see it.
Right.
That out of the way this morning. So we are literally talking about things that happened like and are still happening as we're recording. But Pecker retook the stand.
Yeah, I'm just going to just look exactly where we're at right now.
I think they're on lunch right now.
Let's see here. No, they're back.
Okay, well, first things first. He outlined a few things. He established the history between himself and Trump, how Trump would tip him off on who would be eliminated from The Apprentice so that the National Enquirer could write stories about it. He established that Trump was, quote, almost a micromanager when it came to his money. He, quote, was very cautious and very frugal. This is obviously the prosecutors trying to establish that even if he didn't sign the check, he certainly knew what the check was being written for because he watched over everything. Then they moved to an August 2015 meeting between Trump, Cohen, and Pecker. Quote, I received a call from Michael Cohen telling me that the boss wanted to see me. Pecker said he didn't know what the purpose of the meeting was before he arrived. When he got there, Cohen and Trump, this is all from the Washington Post, Cohen and Trump asked him what he and his magazines could do to, quote, help the campaign. That seems to be a key phrase. He didn't say to help me or to cover my dick or whatever, but specifically to help the campaign, because this is all about whether or not this money should be considered a campaign contribution.
Actually, Dan, as of 6 minutes ago, Pecker testifies that he called Cohen about Doorman's story because of 2015 meeting. I'm just reading the latest CNN. They're literally like one of their updates is Pecker is sipping water. Trump is thumbing through papers. Like this is how minute a lot of this is.
Yeah.
After David Pecker alerted Michael Cohen that a doorman was selling a story about Donald Trump fathering a child, Cohen called Pecker back. Yep. Cohen told Pecker he verified the names were on the payroll and asked Pecker to check out the story. Pecker explained that he called Cohen because of their August 2015 meeting where he agreed that with anything he heard in the marketplace that was going to be negative to Trump, his family, or the campaign, that he would notify Michael Cohen.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
It's pretty, you know, we thought this one would be more like pretty squirrely, but I think some of this is pretty clear.
Yeah.
So maybe this is less. Okay, now he's testifying about the first time he paid to kill a story.
Right. So yeah, there the general expectation that is that Pecker's going to talk about three stories.
Yeah.
Right? So Stormy Daniels being one, this doorman story being another, and then I believe Karen McDougal being the other one, Playboy playmate Karen McDougal, who also had an affair with Donald Trump.
They paid $30,000 to kill that story.
Yeah.
Is Donald Trump going to testify?
I mean, they haven't said, but, you know, it seems that that has been his MO lately. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. The thing that is so interesting to me, and we've talked about this before, is that he heartily denies that he had an affair with Stormy Daniels, which is so out of character to me that I still can't get over it. And Stormy Daniels is certainly going to testify. So if he were to testify, he needs to either admit it or perjure himself, because there's no actual reality that we live on that she made that up.
Right.
So that I do sometimes wonder if that will keep him off the stand.
Hmm. How exciting though, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is this all gonna happen?
I mean, I think we're going to get a lot of good detail. Is it going to amount in a conviction? And will that conviction amount in jail time? I'm skeptical.
Well, whatever shit you give me about New York, who's showing up now?
Oh, you all are bringing it. This is New York at its finest.
Yeah.
Forget Central Park on a summer day. This is it. Fucking wilding on school kids.
Mm-hmm.
And prosecuting a former president. That is the Big Apple bringing it.
And the chances of me simply wandering into some of this while walking the dog are not zero. Like,
and I would say, especially with NYU now in the mix, like, and the Trump trial happening down near you, like, you are well above zero at that point.
Yeah. So I will be your on-site reporter, everybody. Here it says who.
If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
I love it here. It's really nice out, too. It's all juicy.
Gross.
The weather's getting juicy, Dan.
That's lilac not a season. Good description.
I bought so many lilacs.
Okay.
You can see some of them. Oh, these are dead.
I can't see anything you're pointing to off-screen.
Lilacs don't last very long, but man, when they do. Yeah. I bought a lot of lilacs. I love the smell of lilacs. Oof, boy, do I. Yeah, I love them.
All right.
Some of my favorite flowers are coming out.
Yeah.
Some nice veggies are coming out.
Uh-huh.
Been alone, so I've both opened a food lab here where I'm trying out some new recipes and also have only, because I'm doing stuff out of off my schedule, like, because he's not here. So, like, I finished watching us some TV and
I finished watching us some TV.
Talked to my friend for 5 hours on the phone while making veggie sausages. You know, like, it was just like stuff that is different.
Yeah.
I'm making a lot of gestures, but like, you know, like when your other half isn't home and you're like,
definitely.
You're eating Post-its. You're just.
Yep.
How can I get refocused, Dan? Ken says, who helped me?
Sure.
How?
By making some lists.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, let's get a planner.
Yeah, look at that. How's your planner been? You're a few months into that planner now.
Haven't really used it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to today.
I'm like that little sicko's gif right now. Just pressed against the planner window. Yes. Yes. Yes, tell me more.
You see a woman in crisis. We're all a little confused.
On why you haven't used the planner? I'm not confused.
No, I think we're all a little confused in general. Like, our brains are addled.
True.
They're full of too much stuff.
They are, in fact, full of too much stuff.
You feel like you have too much stuff in your brain?
Maureen is saying how there's too much stuff in her brain, while I see her eyes darting rapidly side to side and her face is being lit by windows opening and closing on her computer.
That's because I'm looking to see if CNN has updated anything.
Okay, you need to not do that live. It's okay.
Okay. So Pecker says, if story was true, he would probably have had the biggest sales since Elvis's death. Meanwhile,
that's
moving
about
the
doorman, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah, they're still talking about the doorman. So it's all happening in real time.
Yeah. So we don't need to follow it right now.
Says you.
Says who? Yeah, look at that.
I bought a new wheelie bag that's great.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
There's this bag called Hulken. It's the brand. Mm-hmm. And I've seen them on the street a lot. And they have lots and lots of wheels on. They're really cool looking. But they've got about a shit ton of wheels on the bottom. And they can fold up flat. And you can carry them like a tote.
Oh, it's like a grandma cart kind of bag.
But it's like a
fancy.
It's not a cart. It's like a shiny. It's like a little shiny bag that you can just pull around. And it is amazing. This thing is life changing. I took it over to Trader Joe's the other day and I used it as a cart and then I just wheeled it home and I was like, but it looks real cool and it has.
Are they perhaps thoughtfully crafted to simplify your life no matter where you're headed?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it folds up. And I'm like, later, I'm going to put laundry in it.
Okay. Those are kind of cool.
Yeah, they're cool looking.
That's a pretty cool looking bag.
And they fold completely. So then you can like take it to the Green Market or something over your shoulder.
Yeah.
And then just set it down and like put a giant plant
that's
in it. And it really wheels easily because let me tell you something. I walk for miles with often like two heavy bags over my shoulder.
Yeah.
And I have ripped my shoulders apart doing this. So
yeah, I bet.
I really recommend like, I bought one because I saw people and I was like, this shit is great. Like, it really works.
Yeah, it's a cool looking bag. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. So if you're like me and you go to the grocery store on foot or like you have to haul stuff around, this bag is the shit. Those wheels work.
Yeah.
That thing glides like a dream. I get the bigger one. I could ride in it. Like, it's good.
They're not giving that shit away.
They're expensive.
Yeah.
But you know what? If you're, say, me and don't have a car and you just do your shopping on foot, like you need something that works.
Yeah. They got all these colors. What color did you get?
I just got the basic black.
Basic black.
But I'm thinking about getting a bigger one, too, because this one
Cosmic
has turned out to
be
such a success.
Yeah, the big one's only $10 more than the little one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it. It's good. I mean, it comes with an official Maureen Says Who recommendation. That shit works.
They have it in rose gold. They're channeling like iPhones from 6 years ago.
Yeah.
They're on it.
There's like a pink that costs $10 more.
Yep. That's how it works.
I thought about the pink one, but I was like, the black one. I like the black one.
Well, that's exciting. I'm excited for you and your bag.
It's a quality bag. And I took it to the store and like, I put like a whole shit ton of groceries in it, including a couple like boxes of seltzer water.
Yeah.
Wheeled that shit home like it was nothing.
You know what I did this weekend, Maureen?
What?
In my glamorous life.
What?
I cracked up a whole bunch of concrete, then I mixed up some new concrete, and I poured concrete.
I would love to do that.
It's not fun.
No? Because it sounds great.
No part of it is really very fun. But I am proud of the fact that I think I nailed the concrete. We have this step that has kind of been crumbling into nothing for a while. And I've been sort of chasing it down with small patches for a while. And last year, it really got bad. And I fixed it, but I don't think I had the chemical mix right. I think I had too much water in my mix. And so it all just kind of turned to nothing over the course of the last year. So I had to break it all up, re-poured it. Maureen, I think it's good.
Yes.
I'm looking at it, I bring my knuckles down, I wrap it. It hurts.
That sounds
satisfying. Hurts my hands, and it looks good. I think I might have done a good job with it. It was a lot of work, but now that it's done, I look at it with a real satisfaction.
That
my neighbor,
good.
Who is very persnickety, we have our lawns are like, there's like a, I don't know, a foot of lawn before his driveway that is technically his lawn. And then the rest is like our lawn in the front of our house. And he mows that like 1 foot instead of just leaving it for me to mow eventually. Because here's a spoiler alert. We don't take very good care of our lawn. Anyway, he's very persnickety. And he was like, you did a really good job there. And I'm like, thanks, neighbor. I did do a good job there.
Dan, if I had a lawn, I would mow it all the time just so I could smell that beautiful cut grass.
It is good. Do you remember when the Gap made like a cut grass spray?
Listen, man.
Man, that thing was good.
I have every kind of cut grass candle that comes out.
Yep.
They're never right, but there's a couple that have gotten sort of close.
Okay.
But it is truly the greatest
smell. You could come over and cut our lawn anytime. We hate it.
I don't mind that.
Janice and I, in the summers, we often get into sort of a long game of chicken as to who's going to blink first and actually mow the lawn.
I never, like, that was a job I had when I never minded that job, just going out mowing the lawn.
It's no good.
Cranking that engine and, yeah, satisfying.
We have a electric that you plug in, so you get the little extra thrill of almost running over an electric cord all the time.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
I like I like being able to carry a can of gasoline and feel like I felt like I was doing a cool thing.
Yeah, totally. I get that.
And then smelling all that grass. Oh, love it.
Well, on that note, Says Who is made possible by you through your support of our Patreon at patreon.com/says who. Our Patreon, where you can do this all over again with me and Maureen. That's Maureen Johnson.
Hi.
And me, Dan Sinker. Hello.
Hey.
We're doing a thing that we call the Town Watch. If you give it the $5 or $10 a month level, that $10 a month level also gets you a sticker in the mail that I make for you. They're always really good. Because you become a member of the Says Who Sticker Club, all of that is available to you at patreon.com/says who. Our theme music is performed by Ted Leo. Thank you, Ted. Our logo was designed by Darth. You can contact us at Says Who Podcast on Threads or at Says Who at omfg.town on Mastodon. You can email at hey, that is H-E-Y, at sayswhopodcast.com. You can join the discussion on Facebook at /group/sayswhovians. Our Facebook group is moderated by Janice Dillard. Thanks, Janice. If you want to join the fan-run Discord server, you can always go to tinyurl.com/sayswhodiscord. Whatever you do, though, spread the word, subscribe, leave stars and reviews on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts in the year of our Lord 2024. And anyway, you can join us next Wednesday, May 1st, May Day.
Holy shit.
May Day.
May. It's May of 20.
May Day.
Dan, can I just say?
Yeah.
It is now May of 2024, the year we said we were not ready for.
It is not May of 2024, Maureen.
Well, it will
still
be
April.
But do you feel like it started now? 2024 is here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is definitely
arrived.
Started.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is here with bells on.
Here it is. Here we are.
Here it is.
I was looking at my coffee because there's clumps in it.
Gross.
Well, I use oat milk, and this one, new one, is real clumpy.
Whoa.
It's got all these chunks in it.
That's horrible. Chunk. That is the worst.
What? It's just oaty milk chunk.
Oh.
Oaty milk chunk, yunk, dunk, chunk. Chunky, dunky, 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 dunk, dunk, dunk. Oaty, 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 milk, milky chunk. And chunky, wonky, wonky, dunky, dunk, dunk, dunk.
I am Dan Sinker.
And from the ever evolving situation that is New York City. Welcome to the dream. I am Chunky Dunky Dunky Dunk 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 Dunk. A chunky dunky 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 dunk dunk dunk. Live from New York, it's Maureen Johnson.
And this has been Says Who.
How long until I walk into like a police court and just like somehow end up in speed cuffs? Just end up in speed cuffs just because I turned the wrong way.
Very soon.
I think they arrested someone the other day and also like arrested their dog along with him.
Sounds right.
I'm like, you do not want to risk.
Little doggy handcuffs.
You go near my dog, I'll eat you. I'll eat your foot off.
Jail cell.
However, the Sesshewian who was listening to Sesshewian waved to me across the street while I was walking Dexie. I say hello to you.
There you go.
Because you're not trying to take my dog.
That you know of.
Yeah, she loves a cuddle.
Yeah,
that she Sesshewian loves. She does. Goes like, well, no, well, possibly. Dexie, I take her to stores every day. Like we do errands, and she goes in. She says hi to all of her friends. She has friends that are booksellers in the Strand. She gives them cuddles. So she stops in all these stores to cuddle people and tell them good
morning.
That's
adorable.
She gives them their love. I say, okay, your job is to give love. She goes over and she does a little donut. She gives them love. She kind of coils up.
She makes
so that,
a little circle.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's pretty cute.
Well, on that note, goodbye.
Chunky, dunky, 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 dunk, dunk, dunk. Chunky, dunky, 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 dunk, dunk, wonk.